Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. What you're hearing in the background is not a real orchestra. It is, in fact, a computerized version. For several years, a battle's been underway over the growing use of these products to replace live musicians in theaters, ballet, the opera house. But some of the old battle lines are being redrawn. Now, computerized music is finding an unlikely ally among a group of orchestra musicians who see it as a potential savior for classical music. Joining us to explain why is Jacob Hale Russell, a journalist who's covered this for the Wall Street Journal. Jacob, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
So musicians have long argued that, you know, computers take away jobs from people who are musicians. Producers have argued that the computers are cheaper and that their sound is improving all the time. Now suddenly there's a group of musicians who are not only supporting that, but actually furthering the development of the technology. How has that happened? And who are these people?
Well, it is still a relatively small group, but it's a group of people who have sort of the counterintuitive view that rather than taking away jobs from musicians, we're at a point with classical music where the business is not seen as sustainable. A lot of orchestras have been having financial problems. CD sales are down. We're seeing the demise of all these record stores. Something needs to be done in the minds of a lot of people to make classical music sustainable. And one of the greatest expenses for a composer who's composing a new piece is getting an orchestra to try out their work. Usually a young composer is not going to be able to do that, and that makes you not actually want to go out and become a classical composer. And that one of the uses of this technology is that someone who is not at the level that they're going to get a commission from a major orchestra, they can get a demo tape that sounds pretty good of a piece that they're working on, and they can send that around and use it to get attention to their work.
Now, we've had things like this. Composers for years have had computer programs that would give them a kind of a mock-up. You know, the flute sounded vaguely flute-like and the strings were kind of stringy. Are you talking about something that's a complete order of magnitude different and better than that?
It really is. Well, as you just heard, it does not sound like those tinny noises that used to come out of small computer speakers. This is done with a much more advanced level of synthesis. It's not something that a composer themselves can generally do very well at this point. A lot of people are turning to people who sort of specialize in using this software. And where an old synthesizer, the kind of thing we might have heard 10 or 15 years ago, might have a single, if you're playing a C-sharp on the viola, there would be a single recording of the C-sharp. This new software would have 10, 20, 30 different samples of that note. And so someone who's putting together a piece is going to be able to choose from those, and that's going to make it sound not like this repetitive, fake, computerized orchestra.
All right. So the potential uses here, as you say, a young composer who wants to write an orchestral piece and just needs to get that kind of audio feedback. Does this combination of instruments work? Can get that through this software. Is it affordable to that young composer?
It's to get the most advanced technology, you're talking about a layout of a couple $1,000s. People can pay smaller amounts to people who do this in order to get a sample made for them. I mean, one drawback is that it takes a lot of time and it's very time consuming. Mm-hmm. So if you're a composer, you might not want to be spending most of your day in a basement playing on a computer trying to choose the right viola sample.
We're speaking with Jacob Hale Russell, who has written recently about the kind of changing of the guard in terms of the battle lines between computer music and musicians trying to kind of protect their turf and the art of the live performance. One of the guys you focus on in your article is Paul Henry Smith, who's based in Connecticut, a trained conductor who is the creator of what he calls the faux harmonic orchestra. How does his business work?
Well, it's still in the early stages. He was a conductor and worked as a full-time musician and became somewhat discouraged with the state of the field, and he had done a little bit of tinkering with the intersection of music and technology. He worked for a while with some people at the MIT Media Lab who were doing early player piano technology and early synthesizer technology, but it seemed very far off. So he left the field and a few years ago came across some of this technology again and saw that there was some new products out there. It was completely different. What he thought was probably 50 years off was already here. And part of his view is that one of the problems with this technology, one of the reasons musicians have been so resistant to it, is that it's been backed by producers. It's been backed by the money people. It's been backed by technologists. It's not coming out of musicians. So his view is that in order to make this technology palatable to musicians, in order to make it actually become musically adept, in order to make it grow, the people who have to be driving it are musicians like himself, people who actually come out of a music background, not people who are trying to save money and reduce the number of musicians.
Now, that's not to say that there aren't people who are very unhappy about what Paul Henry Smith is doing. There's you describe an anonymous posting on his website that goes like this: "This man is evil. This project is evil. Die in hell."
Indeed.
What is Smith's reaction to that?
Well, he thinks it's just at an early stage, and people are reacting to something that's it's a very emotional situation. We've had in the last few years, we had a strike on Broadway a few years ago for a few days because musicians were concerned about the addition of just a few computerized musicians in Broadway pits, and then we had another an action that went before the Labor Review Board involving the opera company in Brooklyn. So it's something that most musicians, if they've heard anything about this technology at all, it's that it's going to take away jobs from them. And so he thinks it's just a matter of time before people start to realize that there are advantages to this.
Okay. Now, we can actually do a little taste test here in the studio. We'll do that in a moment. But does it strike you as ironic in the course of researching your article that it turns out that, you know, the guy who's responsible for much of the software that's being used for these faux orchestra things is in fact a musician from Vienna, from the Vienna Philharmonic?
And in fact, the people who he uses to record those dozens of samples of viola notes are mostly former colleagues of his from the Vienna Philharmonic. And that's exactly why, why the technology has gone in the direction it has. And I think part of that is also that in Europe there is a little bit less resistance to it. There aren't the same financial problems necessarily. There hasn't been the same attempt to put in computerized musicians in Broadway.
So talk me through what happens here. I mean, we're going to be listening to a little bit of Beethoven's Symphony No. 7, which has, at the point that we're listening to in the piece, 18 distinct parts, 18 different lines of music, all going together, performed by as many as 70 players. So for each note, the software designer has given whoever's actually putting this tape together many options. It's not just the note will be a C-sharp on the viola. It'll be a hard attack, a soft attack, a pizzicato. Is it all that kind of stuff?
It's exactly that. There's a large library of them. It's, I think, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of samples if you buy the full one for every different musical instrument you can think of. And it's a very painstaking process. If you are just trying to do 30 seconds of music, it can take you could be talking about hours of time choosing the right note. Sometimes it just won't sound quite right. You don't want to use, if a note's being repeated, you don't want to use the same exact sample again and again because that gives it away as being fake. It doesn't sound, and one of the things that people who listened to this in the past said is that it doesn't sound, there aren't enough mistakes. It sounds a little too perfect. And that's exactly what you're trying. You're basically trying to undo the perfection by choosing notes that actually sound like genuine players are playing them.
Because at some point it was a genuine player.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. We're speaking with the journalist Jacob Hale Russell about the advent of a new breed of computerized music software that enables things like Paul Henry Smith's faux harmonic. Now, we're going to hear, you've done this sort of thing for experts before, some pretty, you know, people who are well-placed in the music education system here in the States. Were they able to pick out the live from the Memorex, so to speak?
They were not, so you shouldn't be ashamed if you can't.
Okay, well, I don't know which of these is Philharmonic and which is faux harmonic, but joining us is our WNYC music director, George Preston, another set of expert ears. And
Well, we hope so anyway.
Yeah, you ready for this?
I suppose I am, yeah.
All right, we've got three. And one of them is computer. The other two are orchestra. And George, you don't have to identify the orchestra, although go for it if you want to. But just see if you can pick out which of these is the computer lurking within the other two orchestras. Beethoven Symphony No. 7. right, that's the first of the three, and now here is contestant number two. All right, and now the last of our three clips from this Beethoven number 7. And again, one of these is a computer. Wow. I gotta say, I'm impressed. I mean, Whichever one is the computer, it has sort of... Jacob, the three pieces that we've heard, they're short clips.
Yes, and that's exactly one of the drawbacks of this, that it, you can... If you listen to the piece the whole way through, there are moments that give it away. There are certain instruments that do better with the software than others. Percussion does very well with this. Voice, obviously, does very badly. Strings and woodwinds are somewhere in between. So if you listen to the thing the whole way through, I bet you could get it. And a 30-second clip, it's a little trickier.
All right, WNYC Music Director George Preston, here's where you earn those big public radio bucks. Pick out one, two, or three. Which was the computer?
You know, I think it's number two, but I could be dead wrong. And it has something to do with the articulation of the woodwinds in there. But I could be proven wrong this moment.
I, too, thought it was the second of the three, but for a different reason. I thought there was something somewhat plodding and methodical in the bass, the basses and cellos. So,
and I was listening for chair noises or any extraneous artifacts, you know, but I couldn't hear any of those in any of the three recordings.
What's amazing is actually you can even, we had more samples and some of them were from very old recordings and you could hear the mastering. That was old, and you could tell that it was not the computer because it sounded like an old recording. You can actually, with a computer, apply a filter that makes it sound like a recording from the 1940s.
Yeah. All right, well, we didn't go that far. George, you will be pleased to know that we were right.
Oh, good.
Number two was the Faux Harmonic Orchestra from Paul Henry Smith. Let's hear it again.
You see what I mean?
I do see what you mean. And I still feel there's something in the basses that is a little leaden and a little, I don't know, just to me, comparing it, you know, A, B, C with two human orchestras.
I have to say, though, if you played this for me and said, what do you think of this performance? I would not say, well, that's a computer orchestra.
Yeah.
If I weren't listening for it, I would never know.
So that's a really good example of what this technology is capable of right now over the short term. I mean, and presumably when you did this, Jacob, with your experts when you were researching your article for the Wall Street Journal, presumably he gave you the clip, you know, his best 20 or 30 seconds. But I guess it's just a matter of time before you can do this over a 60-minute period. What is Smith hoping to do with this? I mean, in terms of... You know, not just keeping it inside in a room somewhere, but can it actually have a live application?
Well, in the short term, certainly a lot of what he's doing is working with contemporary composers on doing samples for them and coming up with recordings for them. Because the place where it's probably going to have the most application is you could sell a CD with this kind of thing, but are people really going to want to go to a live concert? But he is next year going to be doing. Most likely in Vienna, he's going to be doing three Beethoven symphonies back to back. It will just be a couple musicians who will be operating the computers and him conducting. The way you conduct this actually is using a deconstructed Nintendo Wii controller. that, believe it or not, because it's very sensitive, it can pick up where your hand is moving. You can read. You can turn them into, you know, you connect it to an actual computer. You get the output, and it allows him to control everything from
the tempo. More fun with wiring and circuitry. The question is, why? Why do you need to conduct something that's in a computer? Why can't you just, you're doing the programming, why don't just program it?
Well, I think part of his point is that there is excitement to having a live performance. You don't want to lose the adrenaline that's there. You don't want to lose, you know, part of being in a live performance is that the audience is responding and the conductor is responding.
Will there be adrenaline flowing when one guy with his back to you with a Nintendo Wii controller points at three people sitting behind computer keyboards?
It's certainly an open question. I think he's hoping there will be, because his other point is that you know, the way this technology will develop more quickly is by having there be live performance, because that's sort of seen as the pinnacle. That's seen as the biggest challenge for this. It's not so impressive that you can make a great recording and pass it off as a recording, because a recording is already digital, and it's already digital output. You're already losing something. So the real test for this technology is whether at some point you could go to a live performance and it would sound as exciting and be as exciting watching four people pushing buttons on computers.
Right. Now,
you know, I was thinking this could be great simulator training for young conductors to avoid those tragic orchestral accidents that can sometimes happen.
And they are tragic, George, yes. George Preston, our music director here at WNYC, and our expert pair of ears as we were testing the faux harmonic orchestra back-to-back with, and I should mention who the other recordings were. I have that here somewhere. Version 1 was the Radio Symphony Orchestra of Stuttgart with Sir Roger Norrington. Version 3 was David Zinman and the Tonhalle Orchestra.
Oh, a great set.
Yes. And then in between we had the faux harmonic orchestra. Now, this isn't exclusive to orchestras. The Zenith Studios, this is in Toronto, right?
The company is based actually in the U.S. It did a performance in the fall in Toronto. And
what they did was they took Glenn Gould's 1955 recording of the Bach-Goldberg variations and had a computer-controlled Yamaha grand piano play it. So all of his finger movements were programmed into the computer, and the piano, without Glenn Gould, actually recreates his 1955 performance right there on stage in Toronto. Here is a little bit of what Glenn Gould's original recording sounded like. That is Glenn Gould. And then up in Toronto, Zenith Studios presented the very, very late Glenn Gould performing that same piece in an allegedly live performance. What do you think of that? Soundcheck listeners, you can tell us what you think by going to the Soundcheck page on our website, wnyc.org, and leaving your thoughts in the comments section. At the moment, we're speaking with journalist Jacob Hale Russell, who's written about the advances in music technology recently. Zenith Studios, I mean, that's Glenn Gould. That's his performance, even though he's not there to perform it anymore.
It is. There's, of course, some... there's got to be some fudging because recordings, old recordings of his aren't perfect. You can't always tell exactly how he hit the note, but they're extrapolating data that is supposed to read exactly his fingering methods and play it almost identically. And the idea, they're actually doing, they have a contract, I think it is with Sony BMG, but I could be wrong, to re-record, to actually release these, because one of the frustrating things about listening to old Glenn Gould CDs is that the recording quality, you know, they've been remastered a billion times and it's not
It can be tiring orally.
Exactly. Yeah. So this, you can get a crystal clear recording that sounds like him actually playing.
But without the grunting and tuneless singing that often characterize Glenn. I mean, you heard just in a little bit of it there, you know, as he modulates from one chord to another. That's not there in this digital version, which, you know, could be nice, but there are also people who kind of like that.
There are also people who, if they're watching a live performance of a piano, like there to be someone sitting at the piano bench.
Yes, yes. All right. Just quickly, Jacob, what's the potential future for this? I mean, is there a limit to what this technology can do?
I mean, certainly technologically it's advancing in leaps and bounds, as everything technologically is. So maybe the answer to that might be no. The question is, Will musicians continue to resist it? And what ethical questions does it raise? I mean, at what point music is supposed to be this amazing creative endeavor? At what point, when you're taking people away, at what point does it cease to be real music? Does it cease to have human creativity?
Jacob Hale Russell is a journalist who's written about this for the Wall Street Journal recently. And we were also joined by our own music director, George Preston. Gentlemen, for your ears and your thoughts, thank you this afternoon.
You bet.
Thank you.